In a scene from the Christopher Robin movie, Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh are standing on a bridge in the Hundred Acre Wood having a conversation about the importance of doing nothing. For the Jewish or Christian listener, this idea of doing nothing on purpose might bring to mind ideas of the Sabbath. Unfortunately, the concept of Sabbath isn't very popular in today's world, in which the production-consumption-production-consumption cycle is king, and the value of a person is often determined by what they can produce and the perceived value of the role they play in a market economy. The same value was placed on ancient Israelites when they were enslaved by the Egyptians. Indeed, while the idea of Sabbath was birthed in the story of the creation as it appears in the book of Genesis when God rests on the seventh day, it is not until the book of Exodus, when Moses receives the Ten Commandments, that the idea of Sabbath is fleshed out for human beings. You heard Ken read about it. No work. Not for you, not for anybody in your household, not for your servants, not even for your animals. In order for us to begin to capture the essence of what that meant to the people then, the integral role Sabbath plays in the life of Christians and Jews, a quick review of the book of Exodus as adapted from the online teaching website Shmoop would likely be helpful. In the beginning of the book of Exodus, the Israelites are residing in Egypt and they are rapidly multiplying. But then a new Pharaoh comes to power and he starts enslaving the Israelites. When he gets worried about how many Israelites there are, he orders that all Egyptians must help to kill all male Israelite babies to control their population. One baby boy, Moses, good. One baby boy, Moses, survives because his mother puts him in the basket in the Nile and he's picked up by Pharaoh's daughter. Moses grows up as an Egyptian prince, but then later when he becomes an adult, he kills an Egyptian overseer when he sees that man beating an Israelite, one of Moses' own kin. Moses heads out of town because of what he did and finds himself in the wilderness. Eventually, Moses has an encounter with God who appears to him out of a bush engulfed in flames, but the bush does not burn. God's message to Moses and his brother Aaron must go back to Egypt to free the slaves. Moses and Aaron ask Pharaoh really nicely if he'll let their people go. But Pharaoh says no, not so nicely. God then decides to display God's power, raining down 10 plagues on Egypt. Bloodied water, lice, flies, livestock diseases, boils, sky fire, locusts, and impenetrable darkness. Then, to top it off, God finally slays each Egyptian firstborn. Pharaoh finally lets the Israelites go, but then changes his mind. The Egyptians pursue the fleeing Israelites to the Red Sea. God and Moses split the sea apart, allowing the Israelites to cross safely. Pharaoh's troops enter after them, but God closes the sea and the Egyptians drown. Now the Israelites are in the desert. God helps them solve basic food and water problems by dropping manna from the sky and having water erupt from rocks. And they set about coming up with rules for their new nation. God gives Moses the Ten Commandments, and these Ten Commandments become the basis of what and how the Israelite people will be. They are the covenant, the promise between God and God's people. They are a game changer. A new rule book, the defining characteristic for what it means for the Jews to be God's chosen people. The story of the Exodus is a story about the Israelite people reorienting themselves to this new reality in which God is their ruler, not Pharaoh. The tabernacle where God resides is holy, not the pyramids or the palace. When God is your God, your primary sense of worth comes from the fact that you are a child of God. When Pharaoh tries to be your God, the empire reduces your worth to what you are able to produce for the sake of the empire. God seeks relationship with God's people. Pharaoh seeks wealth from his people and is willing to gain it based on the oppression of the least among us. A hallmark of the covenant created between God and the Israelites during their time in the wilderness is Sabbath, the chance to do nothing. Under Pharaoh, doing nothing brought death. Under God, doing nothing brings life. Under Pharaoh, the people were just units of production. Under God, the people are productive and industrious, but that is not the end-all, be-all of who and what they are. They are also people of God, and God gives them the gift of Sabbath, the gift of rest, the gift of doing nothing for a whole day every week, and it is as radical and revolutionary of an idea as the ancient Israelites could have known. It takes an entire book of the Bible to tell the story about those 40 years in the lives of the Israelites, the amount of time it took for them to get reoriented to their new identity. Sabbath, the chance to do nothing, is an integral part of that new identity. Sabbath continues to play an important role throughout scriptures, especially in the ministry of Jesus. As he explained to his disciples when the Pharisees questioned him about healing on the Sabbath, he says, "The Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath." Sabbath is intended to help us, not burden us. It is an opportunity. It is not an obligation. It is our weekly chance to do nothing. But, and perhaps because of our doing nothing, we are sometimes doing the most important thing we can do. We are leaning into our identity as beloved children of God with a right to be here, for whom it is going to be okay. It is going to be okay if we stop and rest for a while. As one commentator writes, contemporary practice of Sabbath is not concerned to devise a system of restrictions and blue laws. Thank God. Rather, Sabbath concerns the periodic, disciplined, regular disengagement from the systems of productivity whereby the world uses people up to exhaustion. That disengagement refers also to culture-produced expectations for frantic leisure, frantic consumption, or frantic exercise. Sabbath is the daring recognition that with the change of sovereigns wrought in the Exodus from Pharaoh to God, from the empire to the divine, such unrewarding expenditure of labor is no longer required. Doing nothing on the Sabbath gives us the chance to contemplate and remember who we really are. Children of God with a right to be here. And as children of God, any talk of Sabbath and doing nothing is also an opportunity for us to consider the welfare of those who cannot afford a Sabbath. Those who, though sometimes even employed full-time, aren't paid a living wage that allows them the luxury of taking some time every now and again to do nothing. There are still children of God upon whose backs the empire is being built. And that is a sin. Because God knows. God knows. People need some rest. People need a day to do nothing. Pooh?
Christopher Robin?
What do you like doing best in the world?
What I like best is going to visit you and you say, how about a smackerel of honey?
I like that too. But what I like best is just doing nothing.
How do you do just nothing?
Well, it's when grown-ups ask, what are you going to do? And you say, nothing. And then you go out and do it.
I like that. Let's do it all the time.
Dum 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 dum. I'm busy, busy, busy doing nothing. Doing nothing, that's the life for me. 'Cause when I'm doing something, I'm busy doing something, something that suits me to the T. Because I'm busy, busy doing nothing, I find I never find the time to rest. Being busy, busy, nothing is busy doing something. Doing something is the something I like best. Dump, dump, da-dump, dump, 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 da-dump, dump. I'm busy, busy, busy doing nothing. Doing nothing, that's the life for me. For when I'm doing nothing, I'm busy doing something. Something that suits me to the T. Because I'm busy, busy doing nothing, I find I never find the time to rest. Being busy doing nothing is busy doing something. Doing nothing is the something I like best.